Donald VanderVaart, you've been the secretary at the Department of Environmental Quality now for a little over a year. How's the job gone so far?
It's a very enjoyable job, and it's a very challenging job, but for somebody who's worked in this field for his entire career, it's a very satisfying job.
What is a typical day like for you?
Fortunately, I have to go to a lot of meetings, but we do have times during the day where I get to meet with my staff, and we talk about the issues that are either immediate or the longer term. So it's intellectually, it's a very enjoyable, but as I said, challenging experience. And then, of course, there's the going to different places and doing the outreach, which is important to the job, but it's sometimes tiring for a man of my age.
We've seen a shift at what was once known as DENR, Department of Environment and Natural Resources. The previous secretary, John Scavarla, really emphasized what he was calling customer service. Is that an emphasis that you're aiming to continue at the newly titled DEQ?
Sure. And you have to remember, Secretary Scavarla was a kind of a CEO type. He was very much into the management and the culture shift. And that's fine. I've lived through past administrations that periodically would reemphasize the customer service aspect. He actually did affect a culture change. And the good news is I'm more of a regulatory sort of nuts and bolts guy. I get to come in here now with the culture, you know, on an even keel and focus on what I like to focus on, which is the regulatory implementation of the various statutes that protect our environment.
Okay, gotcha. I want to ask you about this recent meeting of the Energy Policy Council. There were some changes recommended to how the solar industry is regulated in the state, and one would require a permit for any new solar farm. Why push for this new requirement?
Well, first of all, you understand that just about everything requires a permit from from DEQ, and so this is not a new concept in general. Also, what we were really looking for is essentially something analogous to what the federal government already requires for installations on federal lands. We don't treat or believe our land is any less valuable than the federal lands, and what we were looking to do is to make sure that the same kind of protections are in place at the end of these 15-year life cycles of these solar panels. I think the solar industry, they're very protective of their industry. It's totally rational behavior, and they may be concerned that this is going to blossom into some full-blown permitting scheme. That was not the intent. The intent was simply to seek assurances through either bonds or some other mechanism, very similar to the federal government, to make sure that at the end of the life cycle, these panels are taken care of.
Now, I know the solar industry is maybe skeptical of this because they've seen the end of their state tax credits. They're set to expire or did expire already. And, you know, the state ranks fourth nationally in solar capacity. Why would the state be moving away from supporting what's widely considered a booming industry in this state?
Well, and it's really not the case that we're moving away from solar. You know, the fact of the matter is that the taxpayers in North Carolina have contributed close to $2 billion to this industry, and that's great. That primed the pump, and we believe the industry is well on its way. As you said, we're ranked very high in the nation. But at some point, I think the legislature rightly wanted to pare part of those incentives back. There are still federal incentives, and there are also state property tax incentives still in place. There's still the renewable energy portfolio standards, which compensates and buys this power from solar producers at a good rate. So there's still incentives in place.
You mentioned the renewable energy portfolio standard, and there's been efforts in the General Assembly to either freeze that or do away with that. Those efforts haven't been successful so far. But at this meeting of the Energy Policy Council, you recommended that nuclear energy be allowed to be included into that mix. Why would nuclear energy be considered a clean energy?
Well, it is, in fact, the cleanest of all energies. Even solar, which is clean when it's being produced, but it requires some sort of fossil fuel backup during the periods when it is not producing. So if you're looking at your energy mix, Governor McCrory is very clear. He wants an all of the above. He looks at all energy sources. Solar plus its natural gas backup, for example, is still cleaner than coal, but it's not as clean as nuclear. But also, nuclear is a different animal. It's a base load generating source, whereas solar will never give you base load, but it will give you peaking capacity. So, again, I think that there's a solar lobby that's out there trying to protect, which is rational behavior, but protect their industry. But they really ought to realize solar can never and will never compete with nuclear, and nuclear will never compete with solar directly because they are apples and oranges. What the intent was, however, is to recognize that nuclear is clean, and we want to promote various ways of incentivizing it.
What about the risks that nuclear plants pose? I'm thinking of the recent Fukushima nuclear disaster in Japan.
Right, and you need to, I don't know how old you are. I remember Jane Fonda and China Syndrome. The plants that are being built right now are passively protected. That means that when things shut down, they automatically go into a safety mode. Those are different than the nuclear plants in the past. But there are always risks in everything that we do, and you have to compare other baseload generators like coal, which has plenty of risks, as we're seeing now in North Carolina and eventually in the rest of the country. You're going to see us having to deal with the coal ash that came as a byproduct.
So why was natural gas also included in the original intent of that meeting of the Energy Policy Council?
That was not my I didn't agree with that. That was actually floated in the subcommittee. Natural gas is incentivized naturally because of its complementary nature with intermittent power supplies like wind and solar. And the price is very low because of hydraulic fracturing right now. I was not a big proponent of that. I am interested, however, in trying to incentivize nuclear.
Oh, I see. Okay. And so you would like to have that be a part of the mix of the 12.5% with the renewable energy portfolio standard?
I'm not sure it's that simple. My intent was to possibly expand the pie. For us to achieve to really clean up our power sector in North Carolina, we've already made huge advances. We've dropped our CO2 emissions by more than 24% since 2005. We're ahead of the game. For us to make it to the next level, we're going to have to go to nuclear, and it takes 10 years to build these plants. It's time to start thinking about it now.
Okay. You wrote an editorial in the News and Observer, I think about the middle of last year, criticizing the federal Clean Power Plan, and that would require reductions in carbon emissions from the state. Why do you oppose that plan?
Well, thanks for asking that question, because, there's a lot of misunderstanding there. I mean, simply because I'm opposed to a rule that I think is illegal and is not the right way to go about this doesn't mean that we're against trying to clean up our power sector. And the whole point is without the federal government, we've already made that reduction of 24% I referred to earlier. And without federal mandates, we're going to continue to make reductions going forward. The fact of the matter is that some groups have pointed this out. The fact of the matter is we will probably be able to achieve that mandate naturally. Although it is true that we're not being given credit for a lot of the reductions we made since 2005, and that's true. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to sign on to a rule that is inherently illegal. And it also uses a method that I don't think is necessarily the most efficient. So, the answer is we're going to clean up our power sector in North Carolina. We're going to continue to do it, and we don't need the federal government to show us how.
Well, if we're going to meet the goals anyway, then what's the problem with it?
Well, the problem is that it isn't simply try to meet this standard. The format is such that it will put us in. It will, in my mind, it will reduce the number of options that we have, and that's what I'm against. I don't want to be told how to do this. And look, the federal government is good at putting in a regulatory structure that is attainable, and then coming back later and moving the goalposts. So I want to stay as flexible as possible. I want to keep the decisions that we make in terms of electricity generating in North Carolina based on economics. And I don't want to do things that are illegal. Even though I could achieve it, even though North Carolina can achieve that goal, the fact that it's illegal is a problem for me.
I wonder, are you a believer in climate change and that it's happening and that it's man-made?
Well, you make it sound like a religion. The answer is clear that there is climate change. Clearly there's an impact by man-made GHGs or greenhouse gases. I think there is a lot of research that needs to continue to be done to quantify that. I think a great article was written by President Obama's former Deputy Secretary of Energy where he says, look, the part of the science that isn't settled is just exactly how much all these various factors impact climate change. And, he was a physicist from Caltech, so I'm going to listen to what he says. But look, we are cleaning up our power sector. Again, we've made reductions. We're going to continue to make reductions. And thanks to hydraulic fracturing, for example, America generally has dropped its CO2 emissions by more than 10% since 2005. So we're going in the right direction, but that doesn't mean we have to implement an inherently illegal rule to get there.
Well, I mean, isn't the intent of the rule to get the entire country moving on this and to sort of address what they're trying to accomplish, say, in Paris with the climate change goals?
And there's nothing wrong with trying to get the nation in that direction. The problem is Congress explicitly rejected one strategy. It's in my mind, the EPA shouldn't try to color outside the lines in the Clean Air Act to try to do something that may be laudable, but is simply illegal. So what they need to do is go down to Congress and get it done, make the rule, the law changes, and go forward. In the meantime,
Do you think that they could actually do that?
Well, I mean, we are in a Republican form of government, right? I mean, that's the way they should do it. Now, having said that, we are moving in the right direction generally. I think North Carolina is ahead of the game. So, I don't think we should necessarily always look to the federal government to find our solution.
I think, some people have made the point, you were writing this article sort of as a piece critical of Attorney General Roy Cooper, who's also running for governor. But you called his backing of the plan puzzling. And some people have made the point, is it not puzzling that the head of our state environmental agency is criticizing a plan that's hoping to address climate change?
Well, I suppose it could be ironic in two ways, that our head legal officer isn't upholding the law and our head environmental officer isn't seeking reductions. But the only difference is I'm telling you we're making the reductions, and my push toward nuclear will mean that we'll make even greater reductions in the future.
The Coal Ash Management Act, which was passed in 2014 in the wake of the Dan River spill, DEQ was given the task of rating Duke Energy's 14 sites as either high risk, intermediate risk, or low risk. Now, Duke Energy is required by a criminal plea agreement to clean up four of those sites, including the one here in Asheville. And
It was actually first required to do that under the Coal Ash Management Act, and then they signed the plea agreement. But you're right. They are definitely going to excavate. And when you say clean up, you mean excavate. I think there are other ways to clean up these facilities. But you're right. Four of those facilities are going to be excavated.
Right. Now, the Southern Environmental Law Center got their hands on a document. Now, I know you were critical of their move for publishing this, but the document rated most of these sites as high risk. Now, a later release significantly was altered, rating only those four as high risk, and the others low risk, intermediate, or low to intermediate, which is a new classification. Why that significant change?
Again, that was we began the process with the eyes that if we weren't convinced otherwise, we were going to err on the conservative side and rate them as high. Those things, those ratings changed as our staff was given more and more information. And so what happened here is that the SCLC found a document somewhere and they cherry picked it. And it was one of the early documents where we were all in agreement that, unless we're otherwise convinced, we'll sort of begin with a high high-risk rating and move forward. So, you know, all they did was find a document in the middle of a project, and now they're scratching their heads. You know, why should that change just because our staff became convinced that, you know, after they studied it and got more information, that the risk should be dropped. I mean, it was a political move made by, you know, I think their spokesman's actually a politician, so that's what he does, and they need to make a living. I get it, but the reality is that our staff has been working on this very hard, tirelessly, and as they were given more and more information, which we really didn't, you know, we got the information late in the going because it was a very aggressive timeline. Our folks changed on an individual basis, changed some of those ratings.
And now some people are worried about the optics of this. You know, Governor Pat McCrory, he was a Duke Energy employee for nearly three decades. And WRAL reported that during the height of the coal ash spill, you and Governor McCrory dined with the Duke Energy CEO, Lynn Good, as many of these decisions were being made regarding the state's response to the Duke Energy spill. What went on at that meeting?
Well, look, we have plenty of meetings with folks from Duke, with folks from other companies. You know, I really don't understand the characterization of that as being secret. It was on my calendar, which we all know is completely public. I don't know. I guess my question is what about that meeting would have made it acceptable to the optics? In other words, had we met in a concrete building somewhere, you know, 12 noon, you know, which we have. Would that have changed something? You know, I don't exactly understand the optics. I can tell you that it was a very productive meeting, and we've had many productive meetings with Duke and others throughout the, you know, that's what we do. It's a little bit puzzling, yeah.
Many have leveled the charge, though, that DEQ is going soft on Duke because a number of these decisions were changed, like the one we just mentioned, were changed to classify these coal ash risk sites is lower than they had previously been, requiring less from Duke Energy. There was also that settlement with Duke Energy that was much diminished from the $25 million fine, that it dropped down to $7 million, and also gave blanket immunity to the rest of the coal ash sites from being litigated.
The settlement was a result of a policy that was discovered made by the previous administration, and we were very happy to get the settlement we did. After our attorneys told us, you know, get out of this because of this previous policy memo that had been written by the previous administration. They advised us to settle, and we did, and I think we ended up with a very strong settlement in the best interest of the state. I can assure you that there is absolutely nothing that I have seen that's going on that is in any way pro Duke. It's pro North Carolina is what we do, and you know I get that there is a lot of political intrigue that people like to gin up. You know, we're a regulatory body. We're looking out to protect the environment. We're concerned about rates. We're concerned about what our North Carolinians pay for electricity. We want to do things the right way. And we hold Duke accountable, and we'll continue to hold Duke accountable. So I think that what, you know, I understand the optics or that they're as they are trying to be constructed, but they're simply not true.
You sort of mentioned got into DEQ's mission of environmental stewardship and responsibility. What do you say to the people who are arguing that DEQ is moving away from that?
I'd like to see the proof of that. You know, North Carolina is breathing the cleanest air that it's ever breathed. Our public water supplies are improving, but they're better than they've ever been. We're going to continue fighting for the environment. That's what we do. And you know, it's unfortunate that there are some groups that are more political and tend to try to use the environmental field as a kind of a battleground. You know, look, I'm a 20-year veteran in the regulatory field. This is what I do. It may be not sexy. It may be not political. It's what I do.
That clean air that you mentioned, is that clean air the result of laws that are currently in the process of being dismantled?
Not at all. In fact, it's quite the opposite. We're going to continue to strengthen, and if I'm allowed to incentivize nuclear, we're going to get even cleaner air.